Hey, how you doing? Thanks for downloading the show. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. My name is Eric. I'm your host. I also have a YouTube channel called Garden Fork, all about eclectic DIY. Today, my co-host Nicole is here. Welcome, Nicole.
Hey, what's going on?
I have a new headset, a USB headset. I'm trying to have a minimalist recording system for the podcast. I'm on my kitchen table, and the headset you have, which I can't find anymore, it sounds perfect, and this one is problematic. So we're going to go with it for now, and then I'm going to try and upgrade it. But I discovered that this one has built-in noise cancellation. It's made by Jabra. It was highly rated. A podcast website suggested it, and the noise canceling can diminish the voice sometimes, and all I have to do is move the wrong way and it sounds like the noise cancellation kicks in. So my voice will sound a little different than usual. I'm sorry, everyone.
I think you have more, you notice it more. Like, I know in the past you've said that before and I've been like, you sound the same, Eric. So don't worry.
All right.
We like listening to you.
So yeah, actually we're going to talk about minimalism actually later in the show, but,
yeah.
Something I don't know if I related this or not, but a couple months ago, I lost a friend of mine to blood cancer, and it happened rather quickly. So he basically, we have a very core group of four guys who are very tight, and we have a quick time, what's it called, FaceTime. We talk on FaceTime a lot. So our one friend in the group got blood cancer, and he had various treatments, and that didn't work. And so they were going to do the blood transplant, for lack of a better word, because I'm not an expert on it. But they had to go in the hospital for a month for it. And I thought during that time that we could not see him at all. And he's in Chicago, and I'm in New York, and I'm working through one of our other close friends about interacting with him. And he basically died before I got to see him again. And I'm kicking myself because I went through my friend for all the information when I realized I could have, and he was in a state where he was kind of not always able to talk on his cell phone, and we didn't know his family. So from the get-go, if one of your friends is starting to get sick, find out their family's phone numbers.
Yeah.
And if all else fails, you can call the hospital and say, my friend is in there for this treatment. I don't know if I'm allowed to come visit them or not. Because I thought he couldn't get visits because they had, I don't know if they irradiate him, but they kill all your white blood cells or something. So you're very, you know, you can get sick very quickly.
Right.
And it ends up you could visit him. And I would have gotten on a plane and gone and seen him.
Oh.
You know. But the follow-through on this is also my wife at her company where she works, a coworker's daughter had blood cancer, and they worked with this group called The Match, or Be The Match. It's thematch.org. And company-wide, and they also put, I think they put tables out on the sidewalk as well. They asked people if they could swab their mouth for a sample for seeing if they were be a blood stem cell transplant donor. And you have to be kind of young to be a donor. Like, I am older now, so I can't be one. And they found a donor for her daughter that way.
Oh, wow.
And then I believe your data also goes, I think you have to sign something to allow this, but it becomes on Be The Match registry. It's called thematch.org. thematch.org. So if you are younger and want to do something where you can help people, donating the stem cell thing is, from what I understand, not a big procedure. It's not like donating a kidney or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called thematch.org.
Yeah, Nora Ephron died of blood cancer, and she had the stem cell replacement for her leukemia. And then her sister, it was a genetic situation, and her sister, I guess, like, her blood looked weird, and then her sister developed a similar thing, but was able to overcome it, and she actually wrote a memoir about it. Of course, I forget the sister's name, I think her last name is Efron too, but that was really a very harrowing book because, you know, it's just a really scary disease. I joined the Be the Match back in the day. I mean, in college they had things. I still get emails from them, you know. In fact, I think they just rebranded to a new name. I got an email the other week. I need to look that up for everybody, but yeah, it's such, like, you know, you could save somebody's life.
Kind of like the Eric, you know, go donate blood thing. That's so these are two very easy ways to make a difference in someone else's life. You will never meet the person, more than likely,
right?
Unless they're a sibling or a, you know, a relative. But a lot of times with lymphoma and leukemia, the immediate family is not a close match, which I find interesting.
I do too. I wonder why that is evolutionarily. Maybe somebody will tell us.
Yeah, it's radio at gardenfork.tv. Who knows?
Yeah.
So,
did you do anything to honor your friend afterwards, or have your buddies like gotten together, or what?
We went
How
to
are
a
you
bar.
Feeling about it? Okay.
It actually was a catalyst for a bunch of college friends to get together. I flew to Chicago. His funeral was in Fulton, Illinois, I believe. And it's right above Des Moines, so it's right in the Illinois-Iowa border. So we drove across Illinois, which is flat, and it was me and my friends all in a car bombing down the highway. And it was a great trip, but it was unfortunate, the reason for the trip. And then
we've got to get together and do these things before they happen.
And by the family, Scott's family, name is Scott, was blown away because they knew nothing about 100 people who he knew in Chicago. And then the one woman from the family, she says, "I'm kicking myself because I did not know about this part of Scott's life."
Aww.
So, and they were very impressed that six of us showed up in this tiny little town on the Iowa-Illinois border. And it was great. It was because we saw parts of Scott that we didn't know. Like, he had a Camaro, a brown Camaro that he drove in high school, you know, and there's a picture of him with his Camaro.
Oh.
And I think Scott was kind of a mystery to his family because they're kind of farmers and agricultural people, and he was in the arts, in the nonprofit art world of Chicago. But he would, you know, he loved them and they loved him and they would see each other all the time, but there was just a different world there that they didn't know anything about. So
that's fascinating. I was coming home with Oscar the other day, and I was asking about his day, and sometimes, you know, he gets a little annoyed. And I was like, "Look, kid, like, for most of your life until now, I have known every minute detail of you. And so the fact that you're out in the world having experiences that I don't know about, like, it's exciting for me and it's scary for me." But yeah. I just want to hear, you know, I just want to hear about how you're doing. I'm not meaning to pry or whatever. So that was a good friendly chat, as Oscar calls it.
Ah. What I did like about this town, I again used Apple Maps, and it had a little cafe where they roasted their own coffee.
Ooh.
So coffee culture is everywhere. And they were super, everyone there was just really, clearly we were not from there, you know, and everyone was very kind and polite and friendly. And I think everyone in the town knew Scott's extended family because they had lived there for so long. So it's interesting.
Well, pro tip on finding good coffee when you're traveling is this website, Sprudge.com. I don't know if I've brought it up before, but it's kind of like a coffee industry website now. And they have like a map that you can use to find third wave coffee, you know, where you are. And we use that frequently on vacation.
Wow. Can I put the headphone down for a minute and get a glass of water?
Of course.
All right, hold on. Hey, would you like more of Garden Fork or more of Eric? Would you like to get it in your email inbox? I send out just about every week, I send out a little email about Eric's world and new stuff I posted. I even talk about podcasts I've listened to or just interesting stuff. And usually, almost always, at least one picture of the Labradors, Henry and Charlie. You can get that by signing up for Eric's Garden Fork email newsletter thing. There should be a link in the notes to this show. Just scroll down to the description of the podcast in your app, and I hope it's a clickable link. It should be. Or go to gardenfork.tv, and on almost every page at the top of the page should be a sign up. So we have a note here for plumber discussion.
Well, it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts about this. So I have a friend who's, escape valve on her hot water heater. It's not the escape valve. What kind of valve is
pressure
it?
Pressure relief valve.
Thank you, the pressure relief valve. It lets the little people crawl out of here. No,
yeah.
Okay, the pressure relief valve kept failing. And so she called the, you know, plumber, the big plumber or whatever. And the guy came in, he works for some company, and he wanted to charge her $2,500 because he said she needed a new expansion valve and she needed, the pressure into the house was way too high. She needed a pressure valve for that. And it needed to be one that you could read. And I was like, gosh, that seems like a lot of money. Like, I don't know. So she ended up calling. She has like a plumber who just works for himself. So yep. She called the guy and he came over and he's like, listen, you don't need the gauge with the whole house gauge with you can read. He's like, put this one on that doesn't have the measuring, but I can measure it at the outflow. It's fine. And he replaced her valve for her again for free, which was really nice. Said she didn't need the expansion tank. And so I guess I wanted to get your take on, like, how do you know when to use like the expensive plumber and when to use the guy who's a plumber?
You use the expensive plumber when you have to replace the water main in your front yard.
Okay.
But day to day, I call him a one-man band. Like the gentleman Carmine, he's actually my friend, who works on my furnace, is amazing. We used to live in a co-op building, a co-op apartment building. It was small, but our neighbors insisted on using this local plumbing company that had like 10 vans. And
right.
We had a service plan with them called the Gold Plan or something. And every time they came, they found $300 or $400 worth of stuff that was broken on the boiler. And I'm like, I think I could be completely wrong, but I think the journeyman plumbers or apprentice plumbers that work for them all get a commission on how much stuff they did, you know, for a client.
They sell. They're selling something, right?
And Carmine, it's kind of like me. I'm like, if I go somewhere, I'm like, okay, we'll just fix this thing, you know. So they do make money, and plumbing is very scary for a lot of people. It's not for me. I'm like, it's pretty simple, you know. But yeah, I'm all about the independent owner, and that is actually getting harder and harder to find.
Oh, interesting. It's like the vets. They're all being bought up by VC.
Yes, our veterinary practice was bought by, it's called the Veterinary Group of America, I think, or Midwest Veterinary Group. They're still great. There's a manager guy there, and it's got a little more corporate. But the thing is, if you're in the middle of the night and your plumber isn't available, they do have the 24/7 emergency plumbers will save you, you know, if your water main is broken and your basement is flooding or
right.
The sewer main is broken and if there's, you know, waste material in your basement. Yeah, you're going to have to go with that. But I think that kind of thing, there's some homeowners insurance coverage for that. In an emergency, I would call, you know, if your regular plumber is not available, I would call the 24/7 ones. You know, they have a fleet of vans and they will come. It will be expensive. But for your, I just find that my regular plumber is a lot more of a straight shooter and he's like me. It's just simple works.
You right. Know, and he ended up, you know, my friend's guy ended up saving her, you know, $900 because he didn't put on this fancy valve and she didn't need the expansion tank. And I was like, gosh, it seems like a lot of work for just, you know, this that release valve constantly failing. Like, what's really going on? And the other thing I had asked her was like, people down the block, because it's all a row house, right? Were they having high pressure into their houses? Like, I don't know, something wasn't tracking with what they were saying.
Yes. Yeah, I've seen that. It's okay, also, good. If you have a hot water baseboard heat or a steam boiler in your basement, and the pressure relief valve, which goes off to the side of whatever box you have there, and it just usually just drains onto the floor. If that is dribbling, the pressure relief valve is like $15. You can replace that. And if that doesn't fix it, it's probably the little compensation, pressure compensation tank that usually sits above your boiler. And it basically has a rubber balloon inside this round metal tank. And those fail quickly. And
because of the heat, right? Heat with rubber, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. And also the minerals in your water don't usually do well with rubber. But you can tap that thing, and if it sounds hollow, it's probably working. If it sounds like there's water in it, like a lot of water in it, it's probably failed. And if you can actually replace those yourself. Usually there's a shutoff valve right next to it, and you can buy it at your local plumbing supply or your local hardware store.
Huh, and just pop it on there.
Yeah, there's videos on YouTube.
I don't know what I would do without YouTube University.
Yeah.
It's funny, my auto guy, the Highlander, is getting a little long in the tooth. It's 20 years old almost. And it had the check engine lights on. And I was just like, Carlos, I need the check engine light to go away. And he's like, you have to trust me, Nicole. He goes, it's just a sensor of your like gas cap being closed or not. He's like, it's like, if the car drives differently, come back to me. But this little light is yes. not your problem.
Well, that's actually part of the emissions control system, because the vapors that come off your gas tank are usually channeled into a cylinder. It's usually like a little charcoal cylinder. And then when you start the engine, there's a valve that opens up and feeds those vapors into the fuel injection, and the gas vapors are burned off rather than just being exhausted to the outside.
Oh.
There's two or three valves involved with that. And also you have to have a functioning gas cap. If your gas cap, the gasket is failing, you will also get a check engine light on. And getting those to all work together again in an older car is difficult, because there's a little rubber tube that goes from your gas tank in the back all the way up to the engine. And I think there might be one or two of them. And if any of those fail, or the valves fail, the check engine light goes on.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, the first thing he had me do was get a new gas cap cover. Yep. But I didn't buy a Toyota one. I bought an Amazon one.
Yep.
And he's like, I really recommend you get the Toyota one. It's like $45. Okay.
For most states, if your check engine light is on, they will not inspect the car.
Well, what he said to do is come back when it's time for the new emissions.
Yeah.
He'll turn it off and then go get it done right away. But it's funny, I was just at a council member's running for re-election here, and I was at a thing last night with him. And I don't know what it's like in New York, but in D.C., you used to go and they would check your car. They would... It was inspection. It wasn't emissions. And now right. they just call it emissions. And they're not looking at your whole car, noticing whether or not you have a fake,
no.
you know, a broken license plate or broken lights or, you know, there are all kinds of things you could get dinged for. And I was urging them to, like, bring back the old inspection rather than emissions. I know. Like a
all right. So wow, we've covered all sorts of things here, and we have our choice of minimalism, brainstorming guests, small bugs fail, or oh, that's no one is home. That's your note.
Okay, let's talk about minimalism. Okay, were you always a minimalist? Because looking at the videos you've made of cleaning up the garage, it looked like you do like to keep some things just in case in the future.
Yes. I came to what I call my version of minimalism late in life, basically from watching a documentary on Netflix called The Minimalists about these
oh, two, yeah.
two guys, and it's a pretty good movie. I think it gets a little too Netflixy, where there's the, I don't know, kind of arty, slow shots of them thinking and talking about some stuff in their lives, and I'm like, I thought it was, that part was a little overwrought. But anyway, I did like it was kind of this kind of scrappy, like, hey, we're minimalists, we want to spread the word. And they got into this beater car and they had written a book, and they would just, I think, through social media tell people they're coming to a town, and they'd be in the backyard of a bar or something, or at a bookstore. And you could see the light bulb go off in people's eyes about how freeing it is and clearing your brain it is to get rid of the junk in your house. And I used to collect everything because that's what my family did. Everything had value, you know. It was like, oh,
Okay.
that's going to be worth money one day, or we can use that one day. And I'm like, okay, these are these tractor tires from 30 years ago, and they're still in the basement on the shelf, you know.
They're
And
never going to
then
be worth anything.
and eBay came along, and I'm like, oh, I could, if it's going to have value, I could sell it. And when I knew it wasn't valuable, I just would give it away. And so I just find visual clutter now very overwhelming. The garage and my workshop are still a challenge because when I'm done with the project, I just stack everything on the table, on the workshop table. And then I come back and I'm like, oh, I got to clean that before I start the new project. And then I find reasons not to do it. So that's still my challenge.
Oh, that's
And
interesting.
I'm also kind of a visual person. If I don't see it, I don't know I have it. So I hang a lot of things on the shelf, or on like in the basement, on the floor joists, that everything is hanging. So it looks kind of cluttered, but it's stuff I need, like cable ties or wire. Like, you always need like a coat hanger wire for something, you know? So I am still challenged by it, but my home is like, the living room has two Mission rock, mid-century, you know, like Mission style rocking chairs, and a couch and a TV.
Now, how did the camera operator, like, how did she deal with your minimalism?
Well, it's a give and take. You know, she's more of a Pottery Barn kind of person. So I think Pottery Barn just went out of business too. I could be wrong about that. So yeah, there's give and take. Like, she loves to have not tchotchke stuff around, but just stuff that reminds her of different times. And that's fine too. It's just you know, you can walk through the house without having to navigate around a bunch of piles of books, you know, or magazines on the floor, that kind of thing. And if you get a Roomba vacuum, you kind of want to keep stuff off the floor because that way it can vacuum the floor, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, so they did. I just saw a thing. It must have been from them, I think, the minimalists, but it was the 12, 12, 12 challenge. Oh, it was an apartment therapy article. And it was like, just go around every day, find 12 things to throw away, 12 things to put away, and 12 things to donate. And I was like, oh, that's great. It's not overwhelming. It's like a pretty easy amount to do 12, right? You know. So I mean, I didn't find 12 things to throw away. But to recycle or to, you know, to donate for sure. And I think I'm gonna keep trying to do that.
I could probably do 5 things a day. 12, I would get overwhelmed.
Okay.
But the thing is, there's this kind of baked in to a lot of people that they want to give it away, but they want to give it away to someone that'll use it. And unfortunately, a lot of people have a china cabinet in the corner of their dining room, and they want to give it to someone that'll use it. And no one wants a what's called brown furniture china cabinet for a dining room because they don't have dining rooms anymore and they don't have china anymore. But they're like, oh, it's such a nice thing and someone could use this. And literally, someone asked me that the other day. I said, Eric, do you want a china cabinet? I'm like, no.
Nobody wants a china cabinet. I mean, that's why I have to say these all free groups are very helpful.
Yes.
Because maybe there is somebody. I don't know who they are. They're not me. They're not you. But maybe there is somebody, you know? Or they can repurpose it or, you know, upcycle it or who knows what they're doing with it. Yeah, I just, For me, I've tried to get away from like somebody using it to it not going in the landfill, so I can just give it to Goodwill.
Yes, Goodwill is actually saying no to stuff now.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. So the Value Village, they're fine. They'll take it all. I don't know. I'm assuming they have a system.
The problem is the carting fees. I mean, because if they, you know, you people would just dump a trailer load of stuff at Goodwill and they would, you know, throw a bunch of it out. But to cart things from a dumpster to the landfill and, you know, another part of the country is expensive. So
right, right. And I mean, I do think that Goodwill recycles the clothing.
Yep. But,
so I do appreciate they seem to be committed to recycling. And they have some kind of computer program where they recycle all the components of the computer. So, yeah.
It's all doable. You can also, like, if you have iPhones or Android phones in your drawer, there are companies that you can mail them to. And they actually pay a couple bucks, some of them, but they will take them to companies that can pull out the gold that's used on the circuit boards, the silver on the circuit boards, that kind of thing. Because they have some value, and you're keeping these batteries out of the landfill.
Which is, yeah, the first, like, most important thing.
Yeah.
Although I just read that apparently regular batteries, they just change the rules that you can put them into the landfill. And I was like, no, that who changed that rule?
Oh, don't get me started.
All right. Well, hey, I feel like we've made it to 30 minutes. Do you think people are wherever they are?
They are. I want to say one more thing with minimalism. If you watch some of the movies and stuff, like someone will have five coat hangers in their closet with a clean outfit for every day. And that is a kind of minimalism. It's not Eric minimalism.
Oh, okay. So you have more than five pieces of clothing?
Yes, but I wear the same thing every day, and that makes life so simple.
Yeah, remember West Coast Eric, his wife was into figuring out her uniform.
Yes. Yep.
I wonder how that guy's doing.
They're fine. He's making a lot of mission style furniture.
Oh, fun. That's great.
All right. So Nicole and I are going to stick around and talk about the small bug infestation in her house still and brainstorm some guests. That'll be on the after show. If you're interested in hearing the after show, I ask you to consider becoming a patron of the show. That's a cup of coffee a month. You get pictures of the dogs, links to cool videos or interesting articles I find, behind the scenes stuff. Like I usually do a picture of the edit I'm doing and going, hey, here's a video coming up, and just stuff like that. And you can use it on the app. You can get an email of update, and you also get an RSS feed thing. So the after show shows up on your regular podcast app. And Nicole, you're a supporter.
I am.
So if you become a supporter, I'll let you on the show. All right, everyone. Thank you so much. Radio@gardenfork.tv. Are you a minimalist? Are you an anti-minimalist? Let us know. I'll see you. Garden Fork Radio is produced by Garden Fork Media LLC in Brooklyn, New York. Our executive producer is Jimmy Goots. For more information about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes, visit hollowbooks.com. The music in the show is licensed from audioblocks.com and uniquetracks.com.